everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated. I'm your host, Claire Malky. That hot pink Furby that's somehow still in your closet from the 90s.
Mysterious.
There are good ships and bad ships, but the best ships are friendships. Yeah, it's corny as hell, but it's true. There are also good chips and bad chips, but the best chips are Utz salt and vinegar. Yeah, I went there, fight me. Unless you live on Mars, this year with the pandemic has probably been a little isolating. Well, I guess if you lived on Mars, that would be pretty lonely too, but there wouldn't be COVID, so maybe a win. At the beginning of the pandemic, I didn't even realize that losing friends would be a side effect of COVID-19. Not because of any major falling outs, but because I wasn't seeing people. Not at improv shows or workout classes, and not even just running into an old pal on the CTA. Those happenstance moments were like little specks of unicorn dust in this dreary grown-up world. And now, the most social interaction I have is watching my coworkers type numbers into a shared Excel doc, which I used to think was kind of charming, but now it just reminds me how technology does in fact control us. Let's be honest, social media doesn't make this friendship dilemma any easier. I legitimately forgot that commenting on someone's Insta story does not equate to picking up the phone and giving them a call. I liked their thirst trap, isn't that enough? No. But I know it's just so much effort to go through the hassle of opening my phone, going to the calling app, and hitting dial. And what if they don't even pick up? That's the worst part. What if they don't answer? Then what am I supposed to do? Leave an uncomfy voicemail and be like, "Hey, Angela, I was just calling to like say hi and, you know, see how your cat's doing. And yeah, I just really miss you. Okay, bye." But you know what? Yes, that is what I'm supposed to do. Because Angela is probably feeling abandoned too, and she's probably just as ready to make a connection as I am. Besides my resident apartment ghost, one of my biggest fears is rejection. And I used to think rejection only happened in auditions or with ex-boyfriends, but honestly, the possibility of rejection is the risk you take when you open up and invite friends in. And who knows? Maybe this new old friend might also be really into rice cakes, or be down to learn how to roller skate. Or maybe they're also mourning their pre-pandemic self. You'll never know if you don't buy a ticket, grab your baggage, and embark on the friendship. All aboard! We've got an amazing show for you all today. We have the phenomenal actor and comedian Asia Martin with us in the studio. This interview was so good. It was so much fun. I cannot wait for you all to listen to it. Make sure you stay tuned. All this ship talk reminds me of pirates and their need to fight off scurvy. So grab your orange juice and let's get started. Up next, this week's headlines. If New York had counted 89 more people, they wouldn't have lost a seat in the House. For perspective, that's one subway car, or eight boy bands, or the number of times I try to check into my flight before it actually works, or two packs of Oreos, or the number of wishes I make in a day hoping my dad will finally come home from buying cigarettes, or the number of punchlines we tried to make for this joke. Many publishing houses have signed former Trump officials to book deals, which is a bold move assuming that Trump supporters read. Beastie Boys collaborator Money Mark has a collection of over 60 piano keyboards. With that many keys, that makes him the band's janitor. The Senate reinstated Obama-era methane regulations. To do our fair share, the Sit Still crew vows to no longer fart. Aw, Fee, come on! We made a vow! Ugh! A Nebraska woman turned 114 to become the U.S. oldest person. Or at least she was until her surprise party.
Yeah.
The world's glaciers are melting much faster than scientists have anticipated. That's what you get for yelling at your kids to close the freezer door. Hope you're happy now, Mom. 3 quarterbacks were selected in the first 3 picks of the 2021 NFL Draft. And the 4th one was made an honorary buck. 45 people were killed in a stampede at a religious festival in Israel. Beginner's luck, said the running of the bulls. The U.S. has imposed travel restrictions on India due to a rise in COVID cases. If cases drop, officials say they could curry good favor. COVID has begun to spread in young adults at higher rates. Man, these TikTok trends are getting dark. Insurrectionists who were charged in the Capitol riots are working with prosecutors in exchange for smaller sentences. Mainly because longer ones are hard for them to understand. An alligator and a cow stopped Houston traffic last week, causing major delays, after walking out of a bar with a priest and a rabbi. Flocks of birds have started to regularly become unwelcome guests in California homes. And residents thought things were awkward last Thanksgiving. A bomb squad investigated a suspected explosive device that was found in a forest, which turned out to be a sex toy. And this time it wasn't Dustin Diamond. Republicans are pushing for laws to give poll watchers more power. They were excited until they realized it had nothing to do with strippers. The exposed center in Rome's Colosseum will soon be covered with a newly designed floor, where tourists can pay extra to stand on the floor and fight to the death with selfie sticks. Researchers in Egypt were surprised to find a pregnant mummy. Bet they weren't the only ones she surprised. A new debate has arisen on when police should be required to release their body cam footage. Some say immediately, but police are pulling for the Snyder Cut. We just made movies racist. Republicans heckled Mitt Romney at an extended family reunion. A KKKA, Utah's state Republican convention. Bill and Melinda Gates are getting divorced after the worst case of a man catching his wife with an apple since Adam and Eve. And that was this week's headlines. As the world begins to reopen, so do the city's sports arenas. For more on this, let's go live into the outfield with Gabe and Fee. How's Wrigley Field looking, you guys?
Well, Claire, I must say, I'm a little disappointed.
Oh no, why?
Don't get me wrong, it's awesome to be back in the stadium and all, but it's just not the same. Nothing's gross anymore. They did a really good job sanitizing the place, but nobody seated close enough to get in a fight with And do you hear that? Even the organ sucks.
Go Betball! Woo! Sports Games 21! Yoo!
Is this your first game, Fee?
Oh, no. No. I've seen a...
Baseball?
Baseball game before.
Oh, you're killing me, Smalls.
Oh, who's your team?
Oh, I have no idea. Who am I wearing right now?
Your hat just says sports.
Sounds great. Go sports. I'm gonna go get a hot dog.
Wait, Fee, we're doing this segment.
There she goes, and she's gone. Wait, hang on. There's a drive and a home run ball is coming right at me. I think I can catch it. I almost got it.
Gabe! Gabe, are you okay?
Yeah. Just landed on my wieners.
Swing, swing, Gabe, what are you doing down there? You stop screwing around. There's no crying in baseball.
Baseball?
Yeah, that too.
Can I go home now?
Hey, bud. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like you're not having a good time.
Well, Fee, I'd say that's a fair assessment.
No worries, Gabe. It's not like it's the Super Bowl or anything. I mean, it's just baseball.
Hey, 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 whoa, Claire. Hold the cordless smartphone for just a goddamn minute. Just baseball? Let me give you a little history lesson here, okay? Base sport.
Baseball.
Baseball is the truest American sport. See, back when this country was most divided...
3 months ago?
Back to the second to last time this country was most divided, soldiers from the North and South would stop fighting, come together, and create this very game. It paved the way for racial equality in sports with Jackie Robinson, and it was the first women's major league sport!
Wow! How do you know so much about the history if you can't even remember what it's called?
Because I don't care about the actual sport, Claire. It's boring as hell. So, what do you say, Gabe?
You know what? Okay!
Anyway, do you want this ball? I caught like 3 of them when you were in the can earlier.
Holy shit!
In the outfield with Gabe and Fee, everyone!
Swing! Swing! Bada!
Oh, I'm feeling hungry, baby. I think I'm gonna make me a little snack. But I'm not trying to put any work into it, Let's just take something easy and put it in the oven. Some people, when they think of bacon, they think of yeast products, desserts only. But not me. I do 3-course meals, 7 days a week, 365 year round. Cause when I eat, you know, I like it baked. Baked, 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 baked. I'm gonna eat it baked, 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 baked. What you wanna eat? I'll make a little treat. You can go and choose out your favorite kind of meat. And pick your favorite sides, veggies or some fries. We're gonna go and we'll cook them in the oven till they're dry. You're gonna eat it baked, 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 baked. You're gonna eat it baked, 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 baked. Baked. We ain't having no debate, I'll give it to you straight. Baby, if I'm cooking, then you're looking for a bake. A little salt and pepper, you wantin' something extra? Sorry if I'm baking, I ain't looking for the effort. Gonna have it baked, 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 baked. We gonna eat it baked, 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 baked. I have only one demand, put the food onto the pan. Chuck it in the oven, let it bake until it's tan. I'm making what you need, directive is to feed. You can take a chill pill, go and smoke some weed. Cause we gonna have it baked, 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 baked. Oh for heaven's sake, we can make a cake. If it's coming out the oven, then we gonna eat it baked. If it's me trying to please, push the button 4 degrees. My favorite kind of snacks are the kind with melted cheese. We gonna have it baked.
He thought he was making stew, but it turned out it was just fondue. Nothing even in the oven. Oh no, so good. Yum.
Well, that was an attempt. And attempts are good. Sometimes it is good to take risks. Although I don't take risks. I tend to play it safe. Which is why I like it baked. 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 We're gonna eat it baked. 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 Oh, you thought I was gonna have a final verse here, huh? Yeah. You think someone who's too lazy to pan fry their own food is just gonna put that much effort into a final verse? Uh-uh. I'm just gonna put my voice here over the beat and let the beat do the work for me. B. because I like it baked. Baked. Baked, baked, baked. Hey, you want it baked? Baked. Baked, baked, baked. I only eat it baked. Baked. Baked, baked, baked. We gonna eat it baked. Baked. Baked, baked, baked. Oh, and no. I did not forget to turn off the oven. That's how I keep the house warm.
Hey, listener. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated. I know you were probably about to call your Aunt Lisa about how great this show is, but why don't you just send her a text instead? Hey, and while you're at it, just copy and paste that baby into a review on Apple Podcasts. Here, I'll even help you out. It could sound something like this. Sit Still, Look Opinionated is a hilarious show and is built by a team of hardworking comedians. Give the show a listen if you want a good laugh. It's definitely worth all 5 stars. If you've already written a review, consider joining us on Patreon. We've got a great crew, and we would love for you to join our opinionated family. Join our patrons, Anna, Jamie, Anthony, Laura, Andy, Christina, and Sam. To find out more, visit us at patreon.com/sitstill. Up next, my interview with Asia Martin. So for today's Chicago Artist Spotlight, we have Asia Martin. She is a DC native and a Chicago-based comedian, actor, and yogi. Asia, thank you so much for being on Sit Still, Look Opinionated.
Thank you for having me.
This is going to be so fun. I'm super pumped. So for our listeners who don't know you, could you give us a little bit about your background and who you are?
So I'm Asia Martin. That's my name. I am from DC. I came to Chicago to go to DePaul. I went to DePaul, and afterwards I started working at Second City. Throughout my time there, I've been on Torco. I've done written and created a show at the Kennedy Center. And I've been on their main stage. And recently I did the CBS Showcase 2021. And I'm a yoga teacher. I got certified during the pandemic. So I teach yoga now. Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Second City is one of my favorite places. I used to work on night staff too a while back. Yeah. So love all those good Second City moments. So you mentioned you went to DePaul. When did you start performing? Did you decide you wanted to perform when you got to DePaul, or did you know before you got there?
I knew way before I got there. My mom and my grandfather and my uncle, they're all performers. They're all actors. And so when I was little, my grandfather had a summer camp for kids, a theater camp. Him and his best friend from college, they had the Kelsey E. Colley Children's Theater Experience. Shout out to them. And I went there. Since I started going there, I was 5. My mom and my grandfather taught there. We did singing, dancing, and acting. And then, yeah, I taught there after I, kind of grew up some. And then I went to high school, performing arts high school in D.C., Duke Ellington. And so by the time I went to DePaul, I was like really sure.
That's awesome. I used to do the Cappies in the DC area. For our listeners who don't know, I'm also from the DC area. And I saw a couple of shows at Duke Ellington. I can't remember what they were, but they were always really fun. Yeah. It was really cool.
It was cool.
What was that like going to an arts high school? Was it like Fame at all? Or was it like a little less dramatic?
It was like Fame kind of, but it was way blacker. So it was like my high school is the only performing arts high school in DC, and it was 97% black and 3% everything else. So it was just so beautiful and so lit to be in an environment where you could just fully express yourself. I think on the other hand, though, it was kind of catty in a way that like, if you're in theater, people would be like, why are you singing? Aren't you in the theater department? And it would be like, can't we be like talented in many things? So that's the only thing I didn't like about it. But other than that, like Earth, Wind, and Fire came to our school. It was so many famous people who would just like come and talk to us. Yeah. It's cool.
That sounds so much fun. But yeah, was that a little bit annoying how people would kind of siphon themselves off into their own groups?
It was, because even people who would do that were like talented in so many other things. Like everyone at that school felt like multi-hyphenates. I don't know if people call it that, or hybrid artists, but yeah, most people could do more than one thing, and it was just beautiful. So I wish they would let us like minor in something, because we did like have an arts block where we majored in theater, you know?
So when you got to DePaul, did you know that you wanted to do comedy? How did all of that sort of come about?
Okay, so most times when I did monologues, they were comedic, except for like one Crucible Arthur Miller monologue that I kept doing, which, you know, it was too old for me, first of all. I don't know why I was even doing that. But most times I pick comedic artists, comedic monologues. And so I was just doing that at school. And then like a lot of plays I was casting, I was still very comedic. But it wasn't until I became a host at the Second City, I realized that, oh, like, there is theater that is just for comedy. There's theater that you can make yourself that is just comedy. And I love that idea, because I think roles for Black women are kind of like, at least when I was doing dramatic theater a lot, they were very like, there's a lot of suffering involved. And I was just like, man, I want it to be fun. And I realized I was having more fun doing comedic stuff. So that's how I made my way to comedy. Just becoming a host there. I was like, wow, it really, I don't know, open my eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that idea of being able to create your own work. Have you been able to, you know, through the pandemic or just in your own work, been able to do a lot of making your own work happen?
Yeah. I think during the pandemic, I was kind of like mentally kind of locked up, because I was like, whoa, the world is ending. I have lost this dream job. Mm-hmm. I just moved into my own apartment. So I was like, how am I going to pay the bills? I didn't have space to create. But then Second City started doing a show called Helter Shelter. And they asked me if I wanted to be in it. And I said yes. And then I had this idea, like, you know, what are the rats doing right now while we're locked down? Like, what are the rats doing? Are they at the clubs? Mm-hmm. Like, are they? And then I think that kind of re-sparked my creative energy. And then I did a Juneteenth show with Preach, the group I'm a part of, and Bosses and Bonnets, another wonderful Black group. But yeah, so I think I really do like creating my own stuff. And lately I've been trying to just be like, I have to value all of my ideas the same. I cannot put more value on ones that are more lucrative or give me more money. I need to like put the same kind of energy and value in all of it. So yeah, I've been creating a lot by myself, and I like that. I've created a whole yoga career. I think it's so funny, but yeah.
That's so interesting that you say you have to value all of your work on the same level. How do you reconcile, you know, the things that might make you a lot of money versus the things that are more like passion projects?
I think when I think about the fun I have doing them, I think it varies. So sometimes the ones that make more money, like, they also can be fun, but the amount of fun that I have and ideas that are just for me and just with me and my friends, and we're just messing around, like, that joy that I experience with that is unmatched. Like, that's when I really get to be the mischievous little girl and like set something on fire, or be a fancy lady and go all the way into that, or do a rap with my partner and we're like acting like we're from Brixton and like we have these British accents. Like, those things really light me up. And I think sometimes when I'm doing things that are lucrative, I think sometimes people make me feel like I'm too much, because I really like to get silly. I like to scrunch my face up, do crazy things with my legs. So I like that freedom that comes with that. And I try to value that when I'm doing that, if it has no money, you know?
Yeah. Because, yeah, you need those ideas for yourself to remind you, like, why you're a performer and, you know, what does spark your joy in those ways. Yeah. What was it What was it like working on the CBS showcase? Could you talk about that experience a little bit?
It was really dope. The CBS showcase was so dope from beginning to end. It was, when we started, it was kind of like, okay, this is going to be virtual. Is it going to make you feel weird? How's the final product going to come out? But we all clicked and like, really, we had a group chat going and stuff like that. And it was the first time in a long time, that I felt kind of like appreciated, like that my time, like that I was talented, that I had people, you know, who kind of knew my worth. It felt like I didn't have to prove that I needed to be there, that they knew I needed to be there. They brought me there because they knew I had that fire. And then it helped me really bring that fire and kind of level my fire up some more, you know? So I think that feeling of being held creatively and on such a different level than I've been on, I was like, wow, I thought, you know, the industry that I've experienced kind of sucks a lot. So to experience like CBS executives talking to me like I am smart and talented, like I knew I was. I was like, okay, I had a time of my life. And then just being able to write scenes that I'm like, okay, like this is silly and smart. And that's totally my whole, I think that is my comedic brand, is very silly, very smart. And I didn't have to explain jokes. Like that kind of environment for a person of color, for a woman of color, for a woman, for every, like just any marginalized identity, it was incredible. 10 out of 10, would recommend. Yeah.
That's amazing that, you know, even though you were over a virtual environment, you were still able to cultivate that kind of art.
Yeah.
Speaking about the comedy industry, you know, it's a little bit all over the place. And you know, there's a lot of variables in it. In your experience, could you talk about what's been, you know, some of the best parts about the comedy industry, and then also, you know, some of the maybe not so glamorous moments that you've experienced, if you would like?
Yeah, I think the best part about the comedy industry is the innovation, the variety. Like when people aren't afraid to step into what they think is funny, to fully submerge themselves into what they as an individual think is funny, and to create from that place, I'm just blown away and I'm in awe just watching people in this community create like that. I think that's my favorite part, because I think there are some things I remember, like, for example, I know that what we all do is so different, and I'm so happy because, like, for example, like Tremaine Austin, he's in the comedy community, and Tremaine is so funny to me. And one joke that Tremaine told that really sticks in my head, where I'm like, this is why it's beautiful that we're all so different. Tremaine had this bit where he was getting, he was about to be robbed. Like it was a solo character, but he was pretending like he was about to be robbed. And he's like, man, I don't have anything on me. I don't have anything on me. I don't have any money. I don't have any gold. And then he says, well, I do have this manuscript, and it's kind of like gold. And it's like, he goes into like acting like a robber would find value in this manuscript that he has on his person. And that kind of comedy is like something I don't do that. I'm very like I said, very silly. And that's silly too, but in such a different way. And I think like just seeing different people kind of go places that I haven't gone and I don't intend to, but do that thing, like that part just lights me up. And I think things that I don't like about the comedy community is the lack of opportunities, how institutions kind of place people against each other, how institutions overlook a lot of people because they're not meeting their sometimes white supremacist standards. That is some tea. What else? And I don't like when it's when people are just like stealing jokes or copying other people, because I'm like, you have a whole different voice and a whole different body and look, and you can really do something with that. You know, we all got our own tools we could always employ. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. And that's something that I feel like is maybe difficult for newer comedians who are like, oh, I see that works with someone else. Like, let me just, you know, let me just redo it. But like in I think it's like the first episode of Marvelous Miss Maisel, she like discovers that her husband or whatever has been just like stealing the jokes.
I love that
show. I know, that show is so good. I've only watched a couple of episodes. Everyone's like, you need to watch more. And I'm like, I know. There's so much more TV to watch too.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And so you mentioned, you know, people have their own tools and everything. What are your some of favorite tools that you have, and where do you draw inspiration from for your comedy?
Some of my favorite tools are inflections. The way you can make something so funny with just changing a simple inflection. Like, I will get so specific with that. Inflections are very funny. Physicality to me, hilarious. I also like to do bad accents. I'm really not good at impressions or accents, but I really like to do a bad one. That is something I love. And just crazy dancing. Like, I really like, I think it's a lot of pressure on Black people because people think we have rhythm, and most of us do, and it's wonderful. But, and I have rhythm as well, but I think a lot of people expect us to know how to dance. And so when you really can make a face like you're about to kill it, and then you don't, oh my God, I love that. I love that so much. So those are some tools that I like to use personally. And then when people pronounce things wrong, just really going with that, going deeper into that, and really just fluffing it out or making bigger object work, like taking a nail file and supersizing it and something like that feels so fun to me. I draw my inspiration from a lot of different things. Like when I was younger, I would watch the Dave Chappelle show. I love those sketches. I was very upset though, coming of age, being like, damn, but every Black woman on here faces is smush. You have to have your titty popping out. So sometimes that made me upset. Or in Living Color, I really was inspired by In Living Color because they just really were like, Saturday Night Live is doing what they're doing, but we're doing what we're doing over here. Or Mad TV. Maya Rudolph, that is my girl. I love her so much. Her commitment, the different characters she can do. Yeah, I just love how transformative she is. And I just watched Bridesmaids like 2 days ago. Such a good movie. So
that movie, that movie is like, you go into thinking it's going to be so funny, and then there's just some real heartthrob moments. And I'm like, that is good comedy to me because it like knocks you out and then brings you back and you still have a great time.
Yeah, I really love comedy that can take you through the whole roller coaster of it all, because I think comedy is a tool. Like, I think it is a tool for us to get somewhere further. I mean, I think even farce is funny, and farce seems like there might not be anything further than just farce, but I think it reconnects us to the kids in us and stuff. I also want to say I'm very inspired by my friends. Like, the things that they do, like my boyfriend Max, he's crazy with the impressions. This man is silly nonstop. He always reminds me that it's okay to just giggle. It's okay to just be silly. My friend Elias, my friend Jordan, like, it's so many people that I'm just like, yeah, yeah.
And that's something beautiful too about a community, and mentioning a little bit what you had talked about earlier about how everyone is different. And, you know, that is something that's so beautiful about being with artists is, you know, catching what they're working on, and it might inspire you to create something as well. So community is something that we are all about on So Still Look Opinionated. Yeah, it's really beautiful. You know, and speaking of friendships and things of that nature, does the city of Chicago spark interest in you at all? Does that have any part in your work?
I think obviously I get pretty passionate about politics in Chicago. I remember when I was doing the main stage, during process, I tried to pitch two songs about Lori Lightfoot and how she's a cop, because she is. And you know what was so funny? My director was like, no one knows who she is. No one's gonna know who she is. And I said, she's the mayor. And it's very funny, and I hope that every day, you know, when he's trying to eat, even though his foot is in his mouth, he thinks about that moment, because he really told me that, you know, that no one was going to know who she was. And I thought that was hilarious. But I think the politics here are infuriating. And so those are something I do talk about in my work. But other than that, I think the most that Chicago does for my creativity is just make sure that I have good food before I start to create, because I eat so many good things in this city.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite spots to catch a bite?
Okay, Riza's in Andersonville. It's a Persian place, Middle Eastern and Persian place. It is incredible. Their hummus is fluffy, delicious. Creole, it's this Mexican restaurant in Lincoln Park, and they have birria tacos. I don't know how to say it, but it's the ones that are like cheese inside and you dip them in the juices. It's so good. You gotta try
it. That sounds amazing.
And then what else? I just went to Demera the other day. Demera is an Ethiopian place on Lawrence and Clark. It was phenomenal. I had a vegetarian meals from there and did not miss the meat, and actually ate beets and didn't think they tasted like dirt. So yeah, those are just a few. But also Cleo's. It's this place called Cleo's on the south side, and they have southern cuisine, and I'm lactose intolerant, but I will eat their macaroni and cheese every day if I could.
that's a good sign. Yeah, mac and cheese is so good. So you brought up Lori Lightfoot and how you had a song about her and some of her, you know, political things that have happened throughout this year. You know, how has 2020, you know, been for you, like both creatively and, you know, having, you know, everything that happened this year? If you would like to share a little bit about your experience with us.
Yeah, I think 2020, and probably for a lot of people, felt just like a boiling point where you could not do the same things you were doing before. You cannot be the same person you were before. Whether that meant, you know, retreating when you felt emotional or felt upset, you couldn't retreat because it felt like you really had nowhere to go. You couldn't hide behind work because a lot of people got laid off. You couldn't hide behind going out and drinking every weekend because bars were closed. You couldn't just pretend that you didn't see what was going on because we all had time to just sit and listen and see. So I think 2020 felt like a time where there was no turning back. And I think throughout the last year, I definitely felt radicalized. I think I thought I was radical before, but judging by the looks I get when I speak to my family, I know it's real now. I'm the type of person now where, you know, when people go, "I want Barack back," I go, "Do you really?" Because he's a war criminal. So, you know, just stuff like that. We can't go back. I think I also realized that a lot of people who I thought were allies and were my friends, they weren't interested in truly being accomplices. You know what I'm saying? Like they were interested. I think a lot of times in Chicago, we're all in a liberal bubble, and no one wants to be canceled. And especially a lot of white people that I know, I think that they step on eggshells because they don't want to say the wrong thing, so that, because they don't want to be canceled and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think during last, like 2020, I really was like, I can see who's really, really interested in my liberation and theirs, and who's not. And that was just, I think, one of the most beautiful things 2020 could have shown me. And also just really showed me like, oh, I can literally only hang out with people that I enjoy being around. I don't have to hang out with people that I really don't like. I don't have to tolerate anyone. If I'm gonna risk my life during a pandemic to see a friend, it better be somebody I really like and who really likes me. Yeah, I think that was just invaluable information I got last year. It sucked, definitely. But
yeah. I love that how you said, you know, be accomplices, and like really, because that's a really great word. And, you know, a lot of people have had to really have those conversations and really realize like, are you with me or are you against me? And it's, it really opens your eyes to people's, like, what's actually in their heart, you know?
Yeah, it really mm-hmm. does.
Yeah. And, you know, the pandemic you mentioned too, like, people aren't being able to go out and drink or, you know, go out and party or even see a live show. And, you know, so much of comedy is about being live in front of an audience. So do you have any pieces of advice for comedians who are trying to, you know, start doing comedy in this virtual era?
Yes. What I would say is that if you want comedy training, if you want to learn more about comedy, to go to the people who you enjoy. You enjoy what they do. You like their comedy. You think it's smart. You think it's funny. It really makes you laugh out loud. Go and see if they have classes. Go and see what you can learn from them. Instead of feeling like you need to go to institutions, because we saw those institutions kind of crumble last year. Yeah. We saw them go under because they were racist and they were not as inclusive or not as welcoming or accessible as they say. So mm-hmm. I think if you're thinking about taking classes, go to see what people you know who you like to watch in the community and see if they are teaching somewhere. Start there. And then I would also say, this is such a beautiful time to really dive deep into what you enjoy, what sparks the flame in you, what makes you passionate. You're not in any group settings where you got to pretend that what somebody else thinks is hilarious, is good for you, or is what is funny to you too. You don't have to pretend anymore, okay? I'm going to invite you to just go ahead and stop pretending. And I'm going to invite you to really step into your passion and step into your purpose. So that's what I'll say. Just stop following, start leading, start being what you seek. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I hope all of our listeners will take that to heart, because it's tough work you have to do to be like, no, like, that doesn't make me feel good. Like, I have to really put my best foot forward. And, you know, that's part of why the podcast is called Sit Still, Look Opinionated, because, mm-hmm. you know, lead with your opinions. Like, I would rather know exactly what you believe than you just agreeing with me. And, you know, it's a journey, as we all know. But yes.
And I also mm-hmm. think that, like, in terms of just advice, is just to also, like, stop laughing at stuff that's not funny. If you don't think it's funny, don't laugh. it might hurt the person's feeling in that moment, but they'll know, they'll be better. We'll all make each other better if we truly stop laughing at stuff that is not funny. Okay. If it's not funny, you don't have to give your friend a pity laugh. The pity laugh mm-hmm. does not help. And you don't want pity laughs either.
No. In our writer's room, you know, sometimes we'll read all of our jokes to each other. And, you know, sometimes there might be just a flat joke. And it's like, honestly, okay, I don't want that in the show. Because if my writer doesn't even think it's funny, like, I don't want it.
Yes. Yes. Let's cut out that extra work we're doing. If it's not funny, it's not.
Awesome. Is there anything else that, like, you wanted to chat about, or, like, any other questions or any other things you wanted to share with our listeners?
I wrote on a show called Bambi Bakes, and it is about this famous drag queen in town, Bambi Banks Kool-Aid, and mm-hmm. she is cooking edibles and kind of kikiing with her girls, different famous drag queens, some you might have seen on RuPaul's Drag Race. Ooh. So yeah, she's just essentially decolonizing weed from the kitchen to the couch, and they're playing games, and it's a really fun show. So that's on YouTube, and you all want to check that out.
Oh my gosh, I will definitely have to check that out. That sounds like so much fun.
It is.
One of my goals for next season is to actually bring a drag queen on and interview them, because even though it's not like a visual medium, the podcast, I'm like, I really want to chat with one and just, like, you know, yeah. hear their experiences.
It's the personality too. Like, I mean, yeah. I would suggest Bambi if you, you know what, have my suggestions, because she's hilarious. And just a joy to be around. Yeah.
Yeah. What's been that experience like writing for that show?
You know, at first, because I'm queer and I think that I'm probably a passable straight. At first I was like, damn, am I queer enough to write on a show like this? Like, am I going to know enough? Am I going to say the wrong things? Am I going to, you know, just... At first, I was just very anxious about it, but I think I know blackness and I know myself and I know Bambi. And so, and I know weed. I know weed very well. So I just thought like, okay, I can put these things that I know together. And if something doesn't work, then they'll let me know. And I also made sure I brought my friend, an incredible comedian, Shelby Quinn on, and they were just a dream to work with as well. And they just really like helped fill in the spots that I had no knowledge about, or just really helped bring the show together as well. So yeah, it really worked out.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. We'll definitely have to check that out too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Asia, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. If our listeners wanted to check out any of your work or, you know, watch any of your performances, where would you direct them?
I'd say on Instagram. I don't have a website. I just have an Instagram. A lot of people are just using it as website and it's cheaper. So
yeah.
At Instagram, it's _AsiaTheAbstract. I have stuff there. And if you look me up on YouTube, you might see some stand-up. I don't post it on my Instagram, but it's on YouTube. So it's just Asia Martin on YouTube too. So, you know, knock yourself out.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll direct all of our listeners there. Yeah, I totally feel that websites are pricey. They are not fun to have to maintain and keep up. And like, I don't know about you, but I am not a web designer. So
me either. They're expensive to like even get somebody to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And confusing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Asia, thank you so much again for your time. And we will definitely point all of our listeners to your work.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
And that's all for today. If you have any questions or comments about today's episode, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at sitstill_lookopinionated. And now on Twitter at sitstillpodcast. And make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you didn't hear that right, please write a review. Please, please, please write a review. This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and Claire Malky. And written by myself, Claire Malky, Michael Dritto, Fee Basanyavichis, and Gabriel Scavor. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter. Research by Ross Black. This program is partially supported by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council Agency. If you would like to support this podcast, please visit and subscribe to our Patreon page linked in the show notes. This podcast was recorded on the land of the Kickapoo, Peoria, and Potawatomi Nations. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. Oh, and don't forget, stay opinionated. Bye!